Until now, every week I used to have a topic and have a handout. And, you know, that has been working for the past 5 years, but I thought we should have a change and have something new. And so we selected this text called Hymn to Sri Dakshinamurti. Hymn to Sri Dakshinamurti. Why we have chosen it, because it is a very meditative text, even though it has a series of verses, but each verse can be used to meditate and to take our mind higher. Because in meditation, we are trying to reach that highest state, which is the Lord within us, which is shown here as Om, or the Lord's presence. But we don't really know who is this God, what is his nature, what is this world, how was this world created, and who am I, what is my nature, and what is the visible nature, and then what is that within me which causes me to be alive, to walk, to talk. So this brief text actually has the essence of several scriptures. Even though it only has 10 verses, the power of each verse is so phenomenal that I think it will take us several months to do justice to this text. And I'll try my best. This text is considered a PhD text. You know, a person who comes for this already should have studied the Vedas and the Upanishads. We'll try our best to do what the best we can. I have listened to commentaries of some wonderful teachers and read a little bit. So I'll try to use all that, whatever I have heard from the other teachers, Swami Ishwarananda and Swami Chinmayananda and all, and we'll try to come to some understanding of what this text is. Now, we said it's a PhD text, and I don't know if any of you are here are PhD students, but the typical thing about PhD students is that, say, after they graduate from high school, they are undergrads and they don't have a care in the world. They are jolly, they are laughing, they are having fun, going to parties, sometimes showing up in class, sometimes studying. But by and large, college is meant to have fun, and then they, you know, somehow get through undergrad and then they become postgrad students. And now they are serious because there is a lot more material and they have to teach undergrads and they have to do some research. And so they become a little bit serious. By the time they become PhD, forget it. You know, they don't bathe, they don't comb their hair, they don't shave, they don't change their clothes. And they are in their own world, you know, lost in their own world. They don't cut their hair. And they are just thinking about the research topic and what they are going to, you know, how they are going to come up with the thesis. And, you know, there is a whole new world. That's why, you know what PhD stands for? PhD stands for permanent head damage. So PhD students, I mean, we shouldn't make fun. Actually, most of the great discoveries have been made by PhDs. This was just a joke. We owe a lot to them. But the fact is that this text is a very advanced text. And hopefully be patient with me, because as we go through, you will find that some of the difficult ideas we will be repeating. So as we go through in the next 2 or 3 months, this text will become. And for me, it is, I think it gives the highest truth in a very, very beautiful manner. It has been given in such a beautiful manner that you will really enjoy that as you get into the depth of the book. The commentary by Swami Chinmayananda is excellent, and then I'll try to simplify. So now the title, let's talk about the title of the book. The title says on the first page, right on the cover, Hymn to Sri Dakshinamurti. Hymn to Sri Dakshinamurti. Hymn means a song, a collection of verses. Sri means the Lord. So Sri is a term of respect. Now we say Dakshinamurti. Dakshina means south, and Murti means the form. Like, you know, we have a form of the Lord. The Lord is, of course, as we know, formless. He is there, all pervading. He is everywhere. There is no place where he is not. He's there in the floor, he's there in the space, he's there in the fan. He's there in every cell of our body as the life principle, as the pulsating consciousness. But it becomes very difficult to contemplate upon a God who is formless. If you say, what is God? He's formless. He's all-pervading. He's beyond all qualities. He's beyond all thought. He cannot be described in words. You know, that's what the Upanishads say. So then how am I to contemplate upon a form of the Lord that is everywhere, that I cannot describe, I cannot experience, I cannot understand, I cannot explain? In the Upanishad, it says, yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasa saha. He said, the speech cannot describe him. The speech cannot describe him. The mind cannot think about him. The mind cannot think about him. And so, if I cannot think about him, if I cannot describe him, then how am I to love him? How am I to meditate upon him? So, that's why all the religions have some sort of form of the Lord. And a form is necessary for us to hold on to. It is like a crutch. It is like before a child is able to walk, he is given a walker. And the walker he uses to walk. And then he can go beyond the walker. He can leave the walker and start walking upon him by himself. So the form, not that I'm saying the form is inferior. People, a lot of people are there who love the form and just keep worshipping the form and reach the highest. But the form is a way to reach that God that is beyond all forms, that is everywhere. And the form is a means for me to concentrate. It is a symbol. It is like you have the national flag of the U.S., and somebody tells you, you know, there is this beautiful stars and stripes. And somebody says, put it on the floor and step on it, you know, and put dirt on it or spit on it. You say, no, no, no. How can I do that? You say, why? It's just a piece of cloth. Has some? No, no, it's not a piece of cloth. It's the stars and stripes. It represents my country. And I love it. And when the flag is there, I stand up and salute. So the flag is not the United States of America, but the flag represents this great country. And that's why whenever I see the flag, people, I stand and salute when the national anthem is being sung. So the flag represents the United States. Similarly, the form, say you have an idol in the temple, that we say that represents God because it is a form. Because this God who is all-pervading, he's all-powerful, can take many forms. And that's why in our temples we have form of Krishna or Shiva or Vishnu or Ram and so on. These are all the different forms, Mother Goddess, the forms that the Lord takes, because it becomes easier to love a form and to know that form and then go to the highest, the formless. Though there are some great saints who continue to love the form and reach the highest. We're not saying that to love the form is in any way inferior, but that is a means to go higher if you want to. You might say, well, other religions don't have, but if you think about it, every religion, even though they say they do not worship idols, have idols. If you go to a church, you see Jesus on the cross. Now, what is that? That is a form of the Lord. And when we see Jesus on the cross, we kneel down. And we say, that is the Lord himself. Or you see a beautiful statue of Mother Mary, and we worship that statue because she is God's mother. Jesus on the cross, or that cross itself, or that mother, they all represent the Lord himself. And that's why we worship them. And that is how it is easy. When I think, close my eyes, I think of Jesus, and I think of his sacrifice, and I think of his love, and I think of all he did for me, then it fills my heart with gratitude, and then I can remember his Father, the all-pervading Lord who created, you know, who sent his own child Jesus here to help to give us the wisdom. And that is why having a form, you know, Buddha was the one who was against all idols. He said there should be no idols anywhere. And now go to the Buddhist temples. And you find huge statues of Buddha, 10 feet high, 20 feet high. And each temple has a big, and they all go there and they worship Buddha and they light candles and they bring the incense. Why? Because for a human mind, he or she needs a form to hold on to love. And through that, seeing the form of the Buddha, I can remember his great teachings and what a wonderful life he lived and how much he taught me and so on. So the Muslims say, you know, they don't have idols. They destroy idols everywhere. You know, they are against idol worship, and that was their main strength. But if you go to Mecca, what do you find? You find a black stone. And every Muslim who goes there has to kiss that black stone. Why? Because that represents Muhammad. So what is that? It may not have the human form, but that black stone represents God. And if anybody were to try and desecrate it or break that or throw it or anything, he would be instantly killed. In Kashmir, they have a mosque where they have a hair in a glass case. And that hair, they say, is from Muhammad's head. When Muhammad was alive, somebody got his hair. And now they worship that hair as representative of Muhammad. And there was a time when there was a rumor that that hair was stolen. And there were so many riots and people were killing, ready to kill each other. So what I'm trying to say is that every religion needs a form. And so here we have used the form called Dakshinamurti. Dakshinamurti. Now, Murti means form. And Dakshina means south. South. Now, why do we say Dakshinamurti? Because we have addressed God here as Shri, the Lord, Dakshinamurti. Murti, we talked about, is the form. Dakshina means the south. Now, in our Hindu teachings, the south is considered as death, as the abode of Lord Death. You know, we have a powerful deity called Yama, who is the Lord of Death. And it is at the time of death, he comes and takes us, you know, when it is time for us to leave and go to heaven or hell. So, south is considered as the abode of Lord Death. And so, traditionally, they say the teacher sits in the north and the students are sitting towards the south. The idea, it does not mean that the south of the country is bad and the north is better. That's not the point. The point is that the teacher, north, we always represent as higher. So the Lord being teacher, because ultimately everything that I have, whatever knowledge we have obtained, is from the Lord himself. So the teacher is higher, so it's represented as being in the north. And we, the students, who have not yet learned this highest truth, are living in the south, which is lower and which is the world of death. Because I am in this world of death, and there is constant birth and death going on in my life. Every cell of my body is dying and changing and being created. They say the human body changes every 7 years. Every 7 years, every cell in my body gets destroyed, a new cell gets created, whether it's bones, whether it's liver. Every cell in the body is replaced every 7 years. So there are constant birth and death going on in me. My mind, there is constant new thoughts arising, new emotions arising, new ideas arising, new knowledge. You know, there was a time we used to think the world is flat. Now we know the world is round. And then in the future, we may discover more things about physics and chemistry that, you know, we had no idea 10 years ago or 50 years ago or 100 years. Like today, we look back and laugh at the people. Like in the medicine, you know, how they used to practice medicine 50 and 100 years ago. But what we are practicing today, 50 years from now, somebody will be laughing at us. Look how ignorant these people were. They didn't even, you know. So there is constant birth and death going on in me and in this world. The houses are deteriorating. The cars are being broken down. The roads need to be replaced in California. Now we find there is so much deficit and people don't have money to fix roads. So there is this constant birth and death. But in this constant birth and death, there is one permanent existence that never dies, that never changes, and that is the Lord. He was there billions and billions and billions of years ago before the world came. He is there still now, and he will continue to be there billions and billions of years, even after the whole universe ends and the whole world dies. Everybody, nothing will be left, and he will still be there. And then he will create a new world. That's what they say. This whole world emerged from him. It will stay for a few billion years and then merge back into him. Even physics tells us that that we all came out of nothing, and the Big Bang occurred, and this whole world was created. And then after several billion years, the stars will run out of energy. Our sun, which is, you know, producing so much energy and burning all the carbon and helium and everything, will burn out, and the sun will become a black hole. And all the stars will all become black holes, and everything will collapse. And the earth and the moon and everything will end into this big black hole. Until what our scriptures say, that again the creation will start a few billion years. So the point is that when this world of change is there, this world of death, there is one constant, and that is the Lord. And that's why he's called Dakshinamurti, because he can face the south. See, you and I are afraid of the south. We are afraid of death, and we are running and trying to get away from death and trying to achieve this immortality. But the Lord, and also the teacher, the realized master who has understood this truth, and we equate that master with the Lord himself. That's why we worship our great prophets, you know, Jesus and Buddha and Guru Nanak and Shankaracharya and Swami Chinmayananda and these great prophets who from time to time came and gave us this knowledge, and they told us that you are one with the God. You are that immortal self. But we did not understand and we did not experience it. So in this book, we pay homage to the Lord who is the teacher. The Lord who is the teacher and who came down and taught us this knowledge. And that's why they say this hymn is to Sri Dakshinamurti, the teacher and the Lord. But the teacher who has become one with the Lord and has become, who is now in the north. So the north is considered as the land of immortality. The south is considered as the land of death. And we who are in the south look up to our teacher, look up to the Lord, and we salute him or her. You know, the teacher can be a man or a woman. So that is why they say this Dakshinamurti is the Lord who is facing the south. Then it is said it is by Adi Shankara. We still are in the cover. We haven't opened the book yet. So who was this Adi Shankaracharya? And Adi Shankaracharya is held in great respect in the Chinmaya mission. This mission, this building we are in. This Chinmaya mission has 250 centers throughout the world, more than 250 now. And has, you know, all similar centers, and there are people studying, you know, adults and children and so on. And we consider Shankaracharya as our original guru, even though Swami Chinmayananda is our founder of our faith, of our mission. But the knowledge we attribute, the knowledge and the books that we follow are all related to Sri Shankaracharya's teachings. And we call him Adi Shankaracharya. Adi means the ancient one, the ancient one. And Shankaracharya means, first of all, Shankara is one of the forms of God, and we'll talk about that next week. But it is said that he was an incarnation of the Lord himself. Shankaracharya appeared on earth as an incarnation of God. And just as, you know, there is the story of the Virgin Mary, so it is said that even Shankaracharya's parents worshipped Lord Shiva, Lord Shankara. And they, when they worshipped him, the Lord said, I will appear in your womb. And it is said that his mother conceived him with the divine, you know, divine presence of the Lord. So it was like a divine conception, what you call as the Immaculate Conception. So that is how he was conceived. And it is said that Shankaracharya, before he appeared, the Lord asked the parents, that do you want a child who will be brilliant very intelligent, will be my own flesh and blood, my own, you know, power, but he will only live for 16 years? Or do you want a child who will be average and will live a normal lifetime? So they said, they thought about it. They said, it's okay. We want a brilliant child if he only lives for 16 years. And so Shankaracharya was born. And it is said that Shankaracharya was so brilliant that already by age 5 and 7, he had mastered all the scriptures. And he was writing commentaries on the scriptures. He had already studied everything. He knew Sanskrit. And he actually started writing and teaching by age 9 or 10, and preaching and so on. And he was so knowledgeable and he knew so much that it is said that when he was approaching age 16, there was a great teacher called Vedavyasa who wrote the Bhagavad Gita, which we are studying in the Sunday class. And when he came and saw this young boy and how much he knew, and some of the teachings, Vedavyasa said that, I have written a book and nobody else could interpret it like you have. So he then extended his life from 16 years to 32 years. So Shankaracharya only lived for 32 years, but he originally was supposed to live for 16 years. And within his 32 years, he has given us so much material, so many textbooks and so many commentaries and so many teachings. And his teachings were not only filled with the highest knowledge, but they were filled with supreme devotion and love for the Lord. So it is a wonderful mixture of love and knowledge, of devotion and knowledge. And the main focus of his teachings was Advaita. Dvaita means two. Advaita means not two. Not two means only one. So his teaching was that there is only one God. You can call him by different names. You can call him Jesus and Allah and Buddha and Shiva and Krishna and Durga and Lakshmi, Saraswati. It doesn't matter what you call him. And that one God is all pervading everywhere. And that is okay. That is understood. But ultimately his teachings was that he and I are one. In reality, we are nothing but a manifestation of that divine. We think ourselves to be separate because of ignorance, because of foolishness. Just as all mud pots, they may be small, big, large, yellow, blue, green, red. They may be different shapes. There may be saucers. There may be pots. There may be cups. There may be bowls. There may be kettles. There may be huge bowls and small bowls. They're all nothing but mud and mud alone. But in our ignorance, we say, oh, this pot is a big pot and that is a small pot. This is a beautiful pot. That is an ugly pot. This is my pot and that is your pot. And then the pots, they may start arguing too. One pot might say, I'm bigger than you, you know, or I'm smarter than you, or I'm stronger than you, or I'm prettier than you. But that is what we do, you know, even though we are all that one immortal creation, we differentiate, you know, this is my brother, he belongs to my religion, he goes to my church. In India, we say, oh, he belongs to my state. And so I love people from my state and I look down on people from other states. So we make the differences, even though we are all that one reality. It's like pots saying that, oh, I'm a better pot than you are. It's stupid. But we do exactly the same thing. We are not any better. So that was the essence of his teachings, that ultimately everything, whatever you see, everything emerged from him. He alone was there before. In fact, even to say he is wrong, because ultimately it is the consciousness that is beyond male and female. And from that consciousness, the all-pervading emerged this world. And so there is nothing but he and he alone everywhere. Whatever you see is the manifestation of that Lord. And that is called Advaita. There are no two. The individual and God are one. You are that immortal reality. You just do not know that. And through understanding and reading this book, you will understand that immortal truth of the Shankaracharya, that Advaita philosophy, the oneness. And once having understood that, then you develop supreme love for everybody because they are all me. Nobody is separate from me. So how can I love somebody and hate somebody? And that is what these great saints teach us, whether you read the teachings of Jesus or Buddha or Guru Nanak or Mahavir or Shankaracharya. They all talk about immortal love, you know, love thy neighbor as thyself. So that is the essence of the teachings, and that was the message of Shankaracharya. And he spent his whole life propagating these teachings. When he was on the earth in the 7th century AD, India at that time had a lot of wrong beliefs, wrong ideas, a lot of foolish, you know, ritualism and very misunderstood aspects of religion. And even the Buddhism that was there at that time, it was a very corrupted form of the Buddhism, not the one that the Buddha had originally taught, but a form which had become so modified that really was unrecognizable as that original teachings of the great Buddha. And so he decided that in his lifetime, he wants to reestablish the ancient philosophy of the Upanishads. And so he spent the 32 years of his life working to do that. And one of the most beautiful pieces that he has composed, even though it's the shortest, is this Dakshinamurti Stotram, which we shall be covering in the next, hopefully in the next 3 or 4 months, we shall be able to continue it. And so please come and bring the books every time you come. If you miss the talks, Tony has been very generous. He has been putting them on the web. So if you happen to miss a talk, please get on the web. It's called firstpower.info. First Power, it's one word. firstpower.info. And you can hear not only Dakshinamurti, but all our previous talks also for the past several months. They are all on there. The Thursday classes, the Sunday Bhagavad Gita. So you can listen to them. He puts them on the web. And thank you for that. And they are very, very clear. So you can hear them. And that way you can keep the continuity, because this text is rather difficult. But every week we shall definitely try to summarize and, you know, explain it. Took me a long time, just we didn't even open the text. But that is how it's better to study it better and slowly rather than rush. Yeah, and next week I'll tell the story about who told this text to whom. The picture up there, that's for a purpose. So that we'll talk about next week. I didn't have time to do it. But yeah, the knowledge is only given to the students when they are ready for this knowledge.